Claudine.
Hello.
Claudine also walks in your shoes, and she's done so with a lot of success. Besides her own artwork, which you can see on her website, collageartist.com, she has written two books, created an instructional DVD, holds a discussion group online, and has one of the best examples of an artist blog that I've seen yet. I have a feeling that Claudine has made friends with the Time Bandit. Welcome, Claudine. I'm going to let you take it away, and I'll be back in about 43 minutes to help you wrap up.
Okay, and is there any way, are we opening it up to questions to the group at the end, or how do
If you have time and you would like to, I'll come back on. How far close to the end do you want me to come back on?
Maybe like 5 minutes before.
You got it. I'll be back on at, that would make it 3:25 about.
Yeah.
I'll come back on at 3:20. All right.
Perfect.
And then we'll see what we can do.
Okay. Thanks.
Here you go.
Okay. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Claudine Helmuth, and I am a mixed media collage artist. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about myself in case you're not familiar with my work or what I do. I do collage artwork. I have a website, collageartist.com. And for the last 5 years, the basis of my business has really been teaching workshops to other artists and people that want to learn different artistic techniques. And that sort of came about in a roundabout way. I never really thought of myself as that wasn't a goal on my agenda or anything like that. What happened was people started to find my website and read about me and my artwork, and then various people started asking me to teach workshops. And I finally got enough people asking me, I thought, well, maybe there really is something to this workshop teaching thing, and maybe I could make a little bit of money, and maybe I'd be okay at it. Maybe I'd be pretty good at it, so I'll give it a shot. And as of today, I've taught about 4,000 different artists and crafters and people that want to learn my techniques. So I've taught quite a large number of people, and it all started very simply. So what I'm going to do today is give you some tips and just things that I've learned along the way about workshop teaching. That's going to be the first part of our class here today. Then the second part of class, I'm going to talk about book publishing and getting into book publishing, because that was a natural segue for me from teaching workshops. Because first I started teaching all these workshops, and then all of my students started asking, Claudine, when are you going to have a book? We want a book. We'd love for you to have a book. We'd all buy it, blah, 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 and sort of really encouraging me to try out book publishing and having a book. And this was in 2001, early 2001. And I thought, well, maybe I could have a book. That would be kind of a neat thing to try. So I worked very hard on a book proposal. I'm going to talk about all the things you're going to need in your book proposal, different things that the publishers are looking for, and things like that. So that's going to be the second part of our workshop. So first I will start with the workshop teaching. And you guys are all going to get handouts from me. I typed up very extensive handouts with all of this information, so there's no need to take copious notes. If it helps you learn better, I know some people it helps learn better by writing things down as they're listening. Feel free, obviously, but don't feel like you have to write down every single thing that I'm talking about today, because you will get a handout that Ariane is going to send to you. Okay, first of all, let's get started with teaching workshops. Now, workshops are what I liken to, at least the artist workshop, it's kind of like hosting a party. You're hosting a bunch of people with the same interest and topic, and you're going to have fun for the day. They're going to learn some new things. It's not what I consider to be like a college level course where maybe there's more of a solemn atmosphere, at least where I went to college. things were, you know, you had to work very hard, and the teachers would, you know, yell at you if you didn't do well and make fun of your work and things like that. What I consider a workshop to be is like the complete opposite. It's a time for people to explore their creativity and learn some new things, and you're there to help facilitate that. So that is the goal of the workshop instructor. Now, obviously, you're listening to this call and you want to start teaching workshops, so I'm just going to jump right into the pertinent information. And I'm going to get started with the various places to actually instruct your workshops. There are, in my experience, there are a few different places. There are conventions, then there's the art centers, then there's, depending on the kind of artwork you do, there's the craft stores, rubber stamp type stores. And then there is the option of setting up your own workshops. So let me break down these different venues for you. The first one is the artist convention. Now, there are cropping up, if you're in sort of the mixed media, anything that could be considered mixed media, collage, assemblage, things like that, there are these artist workshops that are all over the United States. There's ones in Phoenix, there's ones in Seattle, Portland, Virginia. Those are just the ones off the top of my head. And in your packet, you'll get information to these events. These are more for mixed media type audience, jewelry, beading, quilting, things like that. Collage, encaustic, I'm trying to think of what else, but that type of media. Then there are also a convention every year held in Raleigh, North Carolina by Jerry's Artorama, and that caters more to a wider scope of artist workshop instructors. They have landscape, they have watercolor, and they even also have mixed media as well. And if you want to check that out, this is also in your packet, but it's at jerrysartevents.com, and then you look for their link to Art of the Carolinas. All of these conventions usually take submissions for artists to instruct workshops about a year in advance. So if you're looking at these different conventions this year, then you're going to want to send them an email and ask to apply, and then you would be actually applying for 2008. So something to think about there. I would also very much recommend going and attending one of these conventions to see if you would fit into this type of venue. They're not for everybody. I really enjoy personally teaching at the artist conventions more than any other location, simply because there's other artists also teaching there that you can make friends with. It's a little bit less lonely traveling. The second venue is teaching at the Art Type Center. Now, every city has an art center. Here in Orlando, we have the Crealdi Art Center. We also have a place called the Maitland Art Center. And they not only host regular artists that teach like 6-week-long type courses, they also host visiting artists. So you could travel to, I've traveled to the Sedona Arts Center. I've taught there like 5 years running. I've taught at the Coopville Arts Center, which is on Whidbey Island, Washington. I've taught there a few years running. So there's these artist centers all over the United States, and you can find them by either just going to Google and typing in art center, or there's also a resource called shawguides.com. This is in your packet, shawguides.com. And on there, there are all kinds of different art centers and listings from other artists teaching workshops. The third option that will apply to most of you guys is the option of setting up your own workshop. So finding a space that you can rent and setting it up and doing all of that yourself. I wouldn't necessarily recommend this. Well, I just don't like taking money and setting everything up myself, so I'm kind of lazy that way. I would rather prefer to teach at an art center or something like that. But if you are very industrious and don't mind setting up your own workshop and taking money and making sure everything's very organized for everybody, you can look into renting a space in your city and or elsewhere and hosting a workshop that maybe people even travel to. Once you've kind of figured out where maybe you want to teach, obviously you're going to have to develop some sort of curriculum. A lot of the art centers, they like, if you're a visiting artist, they want at least 3 days, sometimes more, they'll want 5 days, but that can be negotiated. I get really, really tired at anything more than 3 days. I find workshop teaching to be very, very emotionally draining and physically draining as well, because you have to be so present for the students, because that's what they're paying you to be there for. You have to make sure that you're there helping their needs. So I find it very tiring of being on for that length of time. So for me, 3 to 4 days is about my limit for full-day classes. But most art centers want at least 3 days. So you want to think about your curriculum. What would you teach, and how long would it take you to deliver this information? Also, how long would it take your students to work on whatever it is that you're teaching them? I highly recommend, if you haven't already, start taking workshops from other artists. It's very important. Even if I sometimes just take workshops, like I'm not even interested in the topic that much. Like, it's not something that I feel like I could apply to my artwork, but I take it to see how the other artist teaches the workshop, which I think is just as important as learning a new technique or something like that. Seeing what is the teacher really slow with delivery of information? Like, do you feel very antsy at the beginning? Like, okay, like, let's get started, you know? Are they rushing you? Or are they trying to give you too much information? Are they bossy? Are they whatever it is that either you like or don't like? And kind of make a list of these things that crop up so that you can kind of notate your own teaching style based on what you like or don't like when you take other people's workshops. I think that is one of the best ways to learn about what makes a good workshop, is to take other people's workshops. And you will want to practice. I think it's very important. If you've never, ever, ever taught a workshop before, you must practice before you start teaching to your, quote, real paying customers. Number one, it will relax you so that then when you are teaching for the paying customers, you won't be so nervous. And number two, you'll be able to figure out what maybe you're lacking in, what maybe you don't explain as well as other things. You'll want to get together like maybe four or five of your friends or anybody you can get together to take your workshop and just explain to them that you're going to go through your full day of workshop with them, and you want to get notes from them at the end of their experience. And oftentimes you'll have maybe a little small group of fans in your fan base if you've made a little bit of a name for yourself, and they'll be totally happy to be your guinea pigs for your new classes. I like to test out my new classes because there's always things that you think are going to work, and then, or you think they might take a really long time, and then it goes really fast. And I think one of the worst things is you've got a workshop from 9 until 4, and everybody's looking like they're done at like 12:30, and that's like horrifying. So you always want to make sure that you have extra things up your sleeve, so that way if people are really fast, you can go, oh, look, let's try this, or something like that. Pricing. For pricing your workshop, some places like a per-head fee and some places like a flat fee. So what I do is I have a per-head fee, and then if I'm teaching at a place where that wants a flat fee only, I estimate it from my per-head fee. And some places pay your expenses, like the art centers will sometimes, some art centers pay your expenses like airfare and hotel and food. Some places don't, so you want to adjust your prices accordingly. What I do for myself is I have a $65 a head with a 15-student minimum if they are paying my expenses. I then charge an $85 a head if I'm paying my own expenses. Now, some places I actually make more money if I pay my own expenses, but I find if you're teaching at a place like if you're an artist and you have any sort of media that might appeal to a crafting audience, and you're teaching at a store like a rubber stamp or scrapbooking type store that wants some mixed media classes, I think it's best to have them pay your expenses if you can, because then they're more financially invested in your workshop. You would be surprised at the number of art centers and stores that will book you to teach a workshop and then won't do any effort to promote your workshop. So if they're that little bit financially invested in knowing that they're going to have to pay for your airfare, it's in your best interest, because then they will work a little bit harder at promoting your workshop. But it is the burden does fall mostly on you to promote your own workshop, even if you are teaching at a convention, an artist center, those kinds of places as well. I think it's important to have a supply list. Don't try to bring all the supplies for all the students yourself. You'll just make yourself crazy. You'll lose money. And people go through supplies that are not their own with, like, a total abandon. I have noticed, even as we're teaching adults here, there are the adults that will be very conscientious that they're using your own supplies. And then there are people that I think just get so in the moment and they will just waste your material. So I think it is important to have them bring supplies. But that said, be very careful that they are going to use everything on your supply list. Like, nothing makes a student more mad than that they've traveled across the country to take your workshop and that you have them bringing all these extraneous supplies and they're not going to use them. Because sometimes they've never taken a class in your media before, so these are new supplies that they're having to buy. Maybe they're spending a lot of money. So try to be very careful. And that goes back to practicing. If you practice, you can see what people really do use in the workshop. And I think that is really important. I had a friend that took a workshop with some wonderful artists, and they had all kinds of bizarre things on their supply list, like old underwear and stuff like that. And I remember calling me going, I wonder what we're going to use the old underwear for. And I was like, I don't know. You've got to tell me when you get back from the workshop. And when she comes back from the workshop, she's like, we didn't use the old underwear. That's like, so she was like, I can't believe I brought this old underwear that was on their supply list. And there was a whole bunch of other materials, but that was like the funniest thing that I could remember. So make sure you're very careful about your supply list. And what I do when I've never taught a workshop before, you kind of have to guess at the supply list. Then I bring extra backup items, because if you've never taught it before, you're not sure what you're going to run out of or what you might need more of. And it's horrible, horrible, horrible if you're teaching a workshop and like everybody runs out of watercolor paper and there's still four more hours in the workshop to go. So always, those first couple times that you teach a workshop, bring extra of everything. Atmosphere. I did touch on the atmosphere of the workshop at the beginning of the call, and I just would like to reiterate that I think it is very important to have a lighthearted, open, warm, inviting atmosphere for your students to feel comfortable in. Some people are that are taking your workshop are very afraid. They might not have ever tried your media before, so they're nervous. Maybe they're a paper artist and they want to explore jewelry. So they're a little afraid. They're afraid that they're going to be around other people that know all this information and that they don't know anything. So you want to make them feel very comfortable. You want to create an atmosphere that is inviting, and it invites questions and invites a sense of play. I think that is so important, because these are busy people that are taking time out of their weekend to take your workshop, and you want it to be fun. You want them, most of all, I think what can create a successful workshop is not so much what they learn in your class, but the fact that they go away going, that was so fun. I really feel renewed. I feel like I've tried some new things. Maybe I didn't come away with the perfect piece of art, but I learned new things and I had a great time doing it. That would be the best feeling that you could send somebody away with. There are, in some workshops that I have taken, what can really squelch a really good workshop environment is not allowing your students to socialize with each other. It is so important. People are going there as much for learning what you have to teach them as they are to socialize with other people. Do not shush your students. And there are people that, and this to me is just like such a big no-no, but I mean, maybe there are people that think it's a good idea to shush their students, but if they're just in working time where they're working on their own, unless it's getting like really crazy loud and other people are complaining, but just if people are talking, allow that interaction because that is feeding the good energy of your workshop. Let's see, what else? Handouts. I think handouts are so important in a workshop. Handouts serve a couple of purposes. When your students first arrive to your class, they're a little bit nervous. They've spent maybe a couple $100. They're not sure if this is going to be worth, they're hoping this will be worth their money, and they're a little bit worried that maybe they spent this money and it's not going to be good for them. So by having a handout, which you either hand to them as soon as they come in or it's waiting for them at their seat as soon as they come in, it immediately relaxes them. They see that you are prepared, that you're organized, that you know your information, and that they've already got this little booklet of information of your workshop. So right away it relaxes them and makes them feel like, oh, this is going to be worthwhile. This is going to be great. So, and you always want to start them off feeling that way, because if you don't, then it's all uphill from there. So having a handout is very important. You would be surprised at the number of workshops that you attend where there are zero handouts, and I just think that that is a big no-no. I also like having a handout because if there is something in the class description that maybe I've said that I would cover, like transfers or, I don't know, something like monoprinting or something like that, but then you wind up not having time to get to that then you can have that in your handout, and it will, and then you can always refer them to it. So it's like you've covered the information without having to even worry about getting that. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here because I want to make sure that I have enough time to get to the book publishing. In your notes that you guys are going to get, there's a big section on starting the class, and I talk a little bit about getting started on time, which I think is very important. Everybody is very antsy to get started. They want, it's like their little fingers cannot wait to get going with your art supplies. I would not wait more than 5 minutes past the starting time if you have late people. Count like the number of late people, and if it's more than 10 or more than 5 or whatever you think is reasonable, just say to the rest of the class, okay, we have 5 people missing. Is it okay if we wait 5 minutes to get started or something like that? Or maybe bring everybody up to the class and start some introductions while you're waiting for the stragglers to come in, because then people feel like they're getting started and you're kind of biding your time while you wait for other people to come in. Make sure that you introduce yourself at class. Even though some people have signed up for your workshop, they might not even really be that familiar with your work or know who you are or anything like that. So it's good to have a short introduction. Then let your students know the plan of the day. Like, let them know, okay, I'm going to demo for 45 minutes, and then the rest of the day is going to be working time. Lunch is at noon, and class is over at 4, and the restrooms are down the hall. That way you get all this information out there. That way they're not sitting there watching you demo and going, wow, she's going on for a really long time. I wonder when she's going to stop, and I wonder when I'm going to get to make art. If you let them know, I'm going to demo for 30 minutes, come up here and watch, and then we're going to get started, then they know, they can relax. Okay, well, she's going to demo for 30 minutes, and then I get to play, because that's really all that they care about. They just want to know when they get to play. Let's see. And a lot of people will be really worried if they brought the right things from your supply list back to the supply list again. And depending on some people's personalities, they might just be able to roll with it. If you said to bring cadmium red and they brought alizarin crimson, they might be like, oh, well, I'll just try what I brought and see what happens. Some people might have a little mini freak out that they brought the wrong paint when they find out that they brought the wrong paint. So always bring extras so that way you can just say, oh, don't worry, you know, you can just use mine, and then that way that relaxes them right away. Let's see. I'm going to go ahead. And during the class, I feel like it's really important that the instructor make themselves very available to all of the students during the class. A lot of times teachers will demo and then send everybody out to work, and then the teacher will stay up at the demo table and just work on their own stuff. And I feel like, to me, this makes the teacher feel unavailable to the students. If you have a particular shy student, they're not going to go up there and announce that they have a question. So for me, I never, ever, ever work on anything when I'm teaching. All I do when my students are working, I pace the class. I go around and around and around and around and around, and I sort of look over people's shoulders, and I nod and I smile, and then and I point things out to them, and if they look like they're working really hard, I just kind of let them know that I'm passing by, but if they have questions, that kind of thing. So I think that it's really important to make yourself available for one-on-one time with each and every student while you're there. If you want to sell your work in your workshop, I think that that is perfectly acceptable, but don't spend the first 5 or 10 minutes of class talking about how you've got your work for sale in the background, in the back of the room. Just say, oh, I've got a table back there, and if you're interested, I've got books and DVDs or art back there, and just make it a really short one sentence, because you never ever want your students to feel like your priority is to sell your stuff to them. That will make them mad. let's see. As far as publicizing your workshops, once you're all ready to go and you've got your workshops, you've started to get a schedule, there are a couple different locations where you can list your workshop. One is one that I mentioned earlier called ShawGuides.com, and they are free. They will let you list your workshops for free. And the other one is ArtShow.com, and they charge a small fee to list your workshops. Of course, you will be listing your workshops on your website. And there is a great book out there called How to Run Seminars and Workshops by Robert Joles, and this is also in your handout. He wrote a book about training the trainer, and it's like about technical stuff, training people for IBM or something like that. But all of the information delivery and personality types and structuring your time and all that apply no matter what you are teaching. So I really recommend checking that out. Here's a little list of what makes a workshop great and what makes a workshop not great from Susan Falter Barnes of HowMuchJoy.com, and I think it's just a little succinct list that I think is so important. What makes a workshop not great is static, passive, confusing, timid, not much fun, and tense. What makes any workshop great is a safe space, improvisation, spirit and flow, total knowledge of material, authenticity, bravery, organization and clarity, and focus. And as the last part of your packet that you will be getting, I included a workshop instructor agreement, which is a blank contract that you can use and alter on your own for any teaching venue that you teach with. Some locations will have a contract that they provide you, but not every location. And I recommend if they do not have a contract that they provide you, you provide them with one, because you are making an agreement to teach at their location and you want to protect your own interests. Okay, now I'm going to move over to the book publishing, because it's a total natural segue from teaching workshops to writing your own book. And I have a handout for this as well. And obviously, in order to write a book, you're going to need some sort of concept for your book. Is this going to be a picture book? Is it going to be a how-to book? Is it going to be like a coffee table type book, that kind of thing? Right now, if you are willing to write a how-to book, how to do your specific processes that are unique to you and your artwork, it is very easy to get your book published. The publishers are falling over themselves, especially in the mixed media art/craft market. They cannot sign artists fast enough. They see that the readers are hungry for this type of book, and they will it will be very easy for you to get your book published. So that's something that you want to think about. If you have any sort of mixed media leaning to your work, I think it would be very good. And maybe not, I know a lot of artists really don't want to publish how-tos, but if you've been teaching workshops, it's very easy to write a how-to book because everything's already done kind of for you in teaching the workshops. What I talk about in your handout at length here is the book proposal. I think it's very important for you to present these different publishers with a comprehensive book proposal. So I outline some of the different things that you are going to need in your book proposal. And a lot of people are under the misconception that you need to write the entire book before you can propose it. And that is actually not at all what the book publishers are looking for. What the book publishers are looking for is an outline, a really in-depth outline that then they could possibly tweak with you because they might see a different leaning for your book for the market that you haven't looked at yet. And if you've written out the whole book, they're going to feel like they are stuck with whatever you present them. So what you'll need in your book proposal, and I've outlined it all here, is like a cover letter. You'd sort of want a working title, a subtitle. You'd want to list your professional accomplishments. You'd want your biography. You'd want to list classes taught. How many students have you taught? Would it be possible to include your student artwork in your book? People really like seeing that, and the publishers really like looking for that. Other periodicals where your work has already been published. Then you'd want to do a 300 or 400 word description of your book. You would want to touch on two ideas that make this book different from other books in the same medium. So you really want to do research out there of the books that are already out there in your same medium and then figure out what would make your book different. Because a lot of people that buy how-to books buy lots of them. They might have 5 different collage books. So what would make yours different? Why would they buy yours if they already have 4 others? Then there's a whole big long list of other things. You would want to explain 3 important concepts in your book that you would want to communicate. You would definitely want to touch on the skill level that your book is aimed at. You would want to include sample instructions for 1 project or 1 how-to chapter. You'd want to do a sample table of contents and a sample introduction. Now, after you've done all that, I spent about 6 months working on my first book proposal. After you've done all that, you've got to find a publisher. And I listed 3 publishers here in your handout that are right now really, really looking to sign new authors and are in the craft/art category. The first one is F&W Publications, and that's where my 2 books are published. Northlight Books is their imprint for both the fine art books and the craft books. And I gave you a link to their author submission guidelines. And what I recommend doing, even if you find a publisher whose author submission guidelines require less information than what I gave you here in your book proposal bullet points, I would try to include more information than that they even ask for because it just increases your chances of getting picked up by a publisher. The second publisher is Rockport Publisher. They have a variety of different imprints like Quarry and and others, and their author submission guidelines are on the front page of their website, which is included in your packet. And the difference between F&W and Rockport is F&W will actually fly the artist up there and take pictures of your hands doing the different steps. Rockport will have you do the different steps at home and just have you write about them. So it's different information delivery, and you want to figure out what would work best for your medium so that your students will understand your process as much as possible. And the last publisher is Lark Books, who also has artist and author submissions on their website. One thing that I want to touch on is once your proposal is picked up, you will have to sign a contract. Some different book publishers want you to either choose between a flat fee or a royalty arrangement, and I recommend always going with a royalty arrangement because you could make more money in the long run. The flat fee might sound really tempting, and if you really need that money right up front, go for it, but in the long run, you probably make more money with a royalty arrangement. One little known fact about your book is that the title is really not up to you. The publishers see the title as a marketing decision. So you actually have very little say in your title. And for my first book, they wanted to call it Collage Keepsakes, and I about like had a conniption fit. I did not like it. It sounded too crafty, and it leaned more towards scrapbooking, and I felt like my book did not it would confuse the market. The scrapbookers would look at it and feel it was too arty, and then the arty people would bypass the book based on the title. So that's what I told them. I didn't stomp my feet and say, I hate the title, I don't like it. And but I explained to them why I didn't like it, and then I gave them a list of 20 different other titles that I had come up with. I looked at their naming structure, that they had structured the names in like three-word segments, and I came up with options for them for that. And so just something to think about. And there are parts of your book that you're going to have to let go of because some aspects of it are seen as marketing decisions and not as an author decision. And lastly, timeline for your book. Your timeline for getting your book published can be anywhere from 6 to 9 months to 2 years. My first book took about 2 years from the time I submitted my proposal to the time it came out. My second book was much faster because the publishers wanted it out there faster. And one last thing that I want to touch on is the marketing for your book. The marketing for your book is going to be entirely, almost entirely up to you. And I mentioned some little things in your handout that you're going to get, and also you're learning some great tips here at the Smartest Telesummit for PR tips for your book. But don't rely solely on the PR people at your book publisher, because there's usually only one or two people there, and they have about anywhere from 100 to 400 books a year that they are promoting. So it will be up to you, but with all of these great tools that we're learning, I'm even thinking of new ideas for promoting my books. So I hope that that has helped you. If we have a little bit of time, I'd like to open it up to some questions, just touch on maybe some of the most pressing questions, if anybody has them.
Okay, hang on, Claudine. I'm going to unmute, and we'll see how this goes. Remember, if there gets to be too much static on the line, we'll have to cut it short, but we'll try to get some questions in. Hang on.
Okay.
Okay, artists. Does somebody have a question?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. I noticed on your website that you have a licensing section, and I was wondering if you worry about copyrighted images or if you use copyright-free images in your collage.
Oh, hey, yes.
Hang on.
I'm
Claudine,
yeah.
I'm gonna remute for your answer. Hold on.
Okay.
Claudia, yeah, we'll take the question, and then we'll remute right after.
Perfect. I'm really, really careful. I mean, this isn't on the subject of book publishing or workshop, but I think as a mixed media artist, we all need to be extremely careful about using images that are in the public domain in our work, because if your work gets published, you want to be able to publish it. You don't want to have to worry. And I think in the mixed media and this whole community, I think a lot of people need to be more careful about the kind of imagery that they use in their work. And there is a great book out there called The Public Domain, and then it's like some really long subtitle. And if you go on Amazon, just type in The Public Domain, and it's a book, and it'll help you find great resources for imagery that's in the public domain.
Great. Hang on. I'm going to take another question.
Okay.
Is there another question?
Hello?
Artist, do you have another question? Okay.
Yeah,
I guess not.
I have one.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, on the website of these different book publishers, do they tell how much they pay?
No.
Okay.
Hold on. That's secret. That's secret. They don't like you as an author to tell how much they pay either. There's usually something in their contract that says that you won't talk about it either. So they're very secretive about that. And depending on your status as an author, sometimes you can negotiate a better agreement, and sometimes they just have a set agreement, like, well, this is our agreement, and you sign this, and or we're not going to work with you, kind of thing. But always, always, always have your contract looked at by a lawyer, and so that you understand all the terms.
Claudine, let's do this. I'm going to open up the line. It's very difficult when people are speaking to really hear them. And as soon as the person has finished, give me a minute to mute us back again.
Okay.
And then if you could rephrase the question shortly so that everybody, if they couldn't hear it, will know what the question is.
Perfect.
Okay, let's try one more time. Here we go.
Okay.
Okay, does someone else have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Claudine, if... you're saying that the publishers you work with are not going to do a lot of marketing on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. My question, like 4 minutes.
My question is, what would it be perhaps better to look into something like self-publishing? I don't know a lot about that area, but maybe you do, and I just thought, mm-hmm. I mean, if we're going to be doing the work to...
Okay, that's great. Hang on. I'm going to meet you back up again so we can get the answer. And somebody in the background, just know that you've got a lot of background noise, so you want to hit star 6.
Oh, it sounds like somebody's in a wood shop. Okay.
go ahead.
It's like bang, bang, bang. Maybe they're like me. I had my roof redone last week. Okay. Book publishing and whether, since the book publishers are not going to market your book, is it better just to publish your own book? And the reason why it's not like, better either or, but to me it's the distribution that is the key to why you want to go with a bigger publisher, because they are going to have the distribution. They will have contacts like with Michaels and A.C. Moore and Joann's and Barnes & Noble and things like that. They're not going to work hard, necessarily as hard as you would hope to get you in the press, but that's something you can do. If you publish your own book, you're going to have to make contacts with Barnes & Noble or Amazon or things like that. So it just depends how proactive you want to be with that. And there's nothing wrong with publishing your own book. And a lot of times if you do publish your own book and it sells well enough, a book publisher will pick it up. So then you can kind of have the best of both worlds. But to me, it's the distribution that is so important and of why going with a big publisher. Plus, I hate packing and shipping. And so you have to kind of know like your own temperament for doing things like that. And I absolutely hate packing and shipping. So I would die if I had to be shipping books out to all these different people.
Claudine, I'm going to put a little expand on what Claudine has just said for you.
Great.
There's another option. It's called publishing on demand.
Oh, yeah.
And these companies, I actually will recommend the one that worked with my book, InfinityPublishing.com, because they are smaller than the really large ones, and they give you personal attention, plus they have a really straightforward fee system that isn't complicated and isn't hugely expensive. And what will happen is those publishing on-demand publishers actually do have the same distribution outlets to some extent. They have Barnes & Noble. They have Amazon.com. They offer them pretty good cuts. They also offer you a larger royalty than traditional publishers do. I think it's 20%.
Yeah.
And they can get the, and they pack and ship the books for you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, then that sounds like a great
idea. So it is another option, and but again, do your research. Be very careful. I've had people use publishing on-demand publishers that have been really hard to work with, not getting back to you, not getting the work done on time. So do your research. Ask other authors their experience, just like you would ask other artists' experience about galleries.
Great. Okay. Well, that's great.
Okay, we've hit the 3:30 mark here.
Claudine,
thank you. And now if we could just bottle your energy and give that to us in a handout, I'd be happy.
Thank you so much.
And that wraps it up for Smartest Day 3. If you're liking what's going on here at Smartest, why not take a moment and tell us? We have a testimonial line open, 1-800-871-9012. And it will ask you for an extension, 1959 £1. Or you can email us at info@smartest-telesummit.com. And both of these pieces of information are right on the first page in your inside resources. See you tomorrow, everyone. Same time, same place, but different experts ready to help you get recognized, exhibited, and paid for your art.